You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And welcome back. We've reached the final hour. We are in Atlanta, and nightfall has arrived as the tension and the excitement continues to build for tomorrow's Georgia-Alabama game. What an afternoon we've had with so many memorable guests, starting with Tim Tebow and the commissioner. Jeff Foxworthy dropped by. We are happy to introduce Jeremy Swick to us. We've spent so much time, I think we began the season at the College Football Hall of Fame doing a couple of shows. Jeremy is the historian for the College Football Hall of Fame. Jeremy, thank you for joining us. I asked the most basic questions here. That's my journalism background.
I love it.
Explain what a historian does.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm the historian and curator here at the Hall of Fame. I design the exhibits, but also write the history. You know, with social media nowadays, we pretty much do everything, you know. It's fun to catch it in real time. You know, recently with Illinois going into that overtime game,
right,
that Saturday I reached out, and by that Monday or Tuesday, the game ball and, you know, some of those programs were already in-house. And so it's really just sharing those rich history of college football.
Is this, I think I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway. Is this something that, as a kid, that you were fascinated by, or did you grow into it?
I think I've always been fascinated. I'm originally from Wisconsin, so it's Green Bay Packers territory up there. I just remember as a kid, you know, reading every autobiography I could on every player, and ended up going to school at Eau Claire, ended up working at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. And so I think I realized I took enough history classes where my professor was like, you need to do something with that. And, you know, I never thought it'd be curating at two different sports museums.
I know it's a, you know, I know the college, the NFL Hall of Fame is pretty amazing, the National Football League Hall of Fame. How would you compare and contrast it with what we have right here?
I would say it's exciting. I mean, the biggest thing is I love how interactive everything's become.
Here, yeah.
Over the time, absolutely. I mean, everyone from your top-notch fan who probably knows more than both of us combined to someone who maybe is just in town for the game or to see friends. It's just a way to interact and enjoy the game on every single level.
As you look back on history, and, you know, certainly we're living in the moment, and, you know, we had something historical last week at Auburn with an overtime game, and tomorrow is one of the most anticipated tilts, but take us back to other eras where that you find fascinating, especially, I don't know, I'm fascinated by the Rock the Era at Notre Dame and others like that. But where would you land if you had to pick one?
Well, if I had to pick one, that's tough. Mine would definitely be the, you know, late 1910s, you know, World War I era, and then definitely World War II, just with, you know, as things go on in the world, football, especially college football, finds a way to adapt with, you know, having silent seasons or, you know, half, most of the country going off to war. Somehow college football over its 150 plus years has found a way to survive and thrive.
Yeah, it was so interesting, Jeremy, that we sat around last year, not during the season, but leading into the season, wondering, number one, would we have a season? And secondly, and more importantly, would college football survive? And then we just, this week alone, I mean, $100 million deals like we're eating candy on Halloween night. I know that's not, it's going to be part of the history, maybe for another week or two until somebody shatters it. What are your thoughts on where we are right now in this arms race?
You know, I think it's a really exciting thing, and I don't think people think it's something brand new, but really, history just repeats itself. If it's not exactly, it looks a lot similar. I think back to the early years of the stadiums being built. It was who could have the biggest and baddest stadiums in college football. And that really started a stadium's arms race, and that's what I wrote my master's thesis on, was college football stadiums in the 1920s, looking at memorial stadiums at Illinois, Indiana, and Minnesota, and just how they used schools to kind of build, they used the students and they used the school to build up these giant stadiums that, with some areas, not many people even traveled to except to.
So going back to that, what we're talking, the 1910, 1920, how big were the stadiums?
I mean, you look at some of the earliest stadiums, they rival some of the, the stadiums today just by, I guess you could say, time period and era. I mean, you start to see the real, these things look like cathedrals, if you will.
Well, that's how they all got so big originally.
Yes, yes.
It was, I'm not talking about what we have behind us.
Correct.
I'm talking about back in the day.
Yeah, that's a little different, but you just started to see these stadiums being built at, kind of an incredible race, and, some of them worked well than others. A lot of times there was these grand plans, and then dial it back a little bit to what the budget allowed.
So let's say Illinois, Wisconsin, how were these stadiums paid for back in the day?
It's a really interesting thing. It's actually really it was based on the students and the alumni. I always tell people we have to look at history with its own historical lens. And students a lot of times really wanted to give back to their universities, maybe because the universities weren't taking as much as they do today. But you started with these, maybe your class would raise money for a memorial bench or a memorial archway.
Right.
Well, they started to realize that, what if we did a memorial stadium? And instead of doing 1 year of the senior class, you'd start paying in as a freshman. And I learned through my research, these faculty and staff at the university, they knew what they were doing. So I found correspondence of these universities writing back and forth and basically allowing it to be student run with that light oversight from administration. To get other, not only just stadiums, but there was dorms, there were libraries built, all kind of on the backs of students, but it wasn't as predatory as I think we kind of look at it as today, It was really a time where these students genuinely wanted to give back, and that was one of the ways they could.
Jeremy, in terms of compensation, if you took us back 100 years, what were coaches making?
Coaches were making, a pretty, relatively speaking, a pretty penny. You look at a guy like Heisman, who bounced around quite a bit.
He did.
It was one of those just for that little bit.
He coached at Auburn, too.
A little bit more of a salary, And so I think a lot of the things we see today aren't that new. They just might have a couple more zeros at the end of them.
So I don't know where the cliche began. History repeats itself, but you would say it's applicable to college football.
I'd say if it doesn't repeat itself, it looks really familiar. every couple of decades.
As we close here, Jeremy, we have this epic game tomorrow, and I'm curious if you could spin this forward 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years. I know I'm asking you a speculative question to a historian. But what do you think it's going to look like?
I think as much as the rules might change, game becomes more safe. I think, especially with college football, the more and more I've learned is that passion and, the excitement for the game will always be there. It might not look the same as we see it today, but it's definitely one of those things that's always really exciting.
I'm thrilled to talk to you because I am a history buff. I've never dealt that. I've read a lot of old books on college football, but I've never talked to a genuine historian. So I'm calling you again, Jeremy. Jeremy Swick, the historian and curator from the Hall of Fame. Come back. Loved having you. Fantastic. We'll take a break. Laura Rutledge will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We're back, and I thought of you today. So it's, you know, the last 4 or 5 weeks, it's been 35, 45. It's been cold every day. It's 75 degrees here in Atlanta, and we're inside.
Gorgeous. We've been freezing and trying to just power through. And I say we, and it's mostly been you, because I get a little extra fat on me than you do. But in all honesty, I am relieved that you're inside right now.
Yeah.
You deserve that, Paul. It's been a long few weeks here.
Yeah. And we—it's not like we've been in
Antarctica.
Yeah, I mean we've been in Auburn and Knoxville and Tuscaloosa.
I know, but really cold and quite nice here in Atlanta. It's beautiful. There's so many fans here. It's awesome to see everybody again and to be back here. You know, last year here, you weren't with us last year, but
no.
It was.
I was out touring.
You were out starting your solo art. Actually, you're already a solo artist, but you were really letting your musical business fly.
I was trying folk, and it didn't work.
You know, I think you're more of a rap guy,
I am.
To be totally honest. So we're going to work on that. By the way, the new album called Fine Bomb, but like B-O-M-B, drops... I think in April, right?
Gap Band did this many years ago. Drop a bomb on...
Yeah.
Before your time.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I do shade a little bit 70s, as we've talked before.
I know.
Even though I wasn't alive then. But, yeah, it's been so much fun to be back and to see all the fans again and to be back here at the SEC Championship. It feels a lot different than even some of the other conference championships, especially with what's on the line.
So you just talked to the two coaches. That's the two coaches in this game or some other
I
game.
I did. Yeah, I just interviewed Nick Saban and Kirby Smart together. That coach's show comes on right after your show here, so everyone will be able to hear it. But really interesting to see them together.
And what was it like?
Well, it's funny because they were both very loose, very entertaining.
Do they know each other?
They are quite familiar with each other. And I think, you know, as much as we make that into a game strategy thing, what occurred to me watching them interact is that they really are friends. And I even asked a question about that, and Coach Saban brought up the point that he doesn't always dislike his opponents. Now, I think sometimes he does, but in this case, it can be very friendly and yet still, you know, obviously wanting to find a way to win. But to me, you know, some of the most interesting stuff was just watching them interact now, knowing what they're going to be dealing with tomorrow. Both sides, though, feeling, I think, in all my years of interviewing these coaches, very confident. Tell they're both bringing a lot of confidence.
Yeah, and you interviewed them, I think, 3 years ago at this game, and that was a memorable moment.
I was just telling somebody that story.
Can you share this?
Yeah, well, so the funny thing was, it was never actually on TV because it was at the coaches' lunch, and they used to do a big coaches' lunch, and now we do this coaches' show instead, probably because of my gaffe that I had at that luncheon. But we take fan questions from the crowd, and somebody asked a question that was directed at Nick Saban that was supposed to be, Coach, how have you been able to accomplish such sustained success for such a long period of time? So instead of saying success, I said, Coach, as I was trying to just read the question innocently, how have you accomplished such sustained sex for such a long time? To which Kirby Smart nearly fell out of his chair. I am humiliated, trying so hard to retract my statement, but yet it's already gone out there. And Coach Saban, very deadpan, says, I'm not sure how to respond to that question. To this day, I think it exists on YouTube if anybody wants to find it, but to this day, Paul, you know, I've had many embarrassing moments, and I'm not ashamed of them because...
I'm just glad you never asked me that question.
What would your answer have been?
Just, you know, good health and... and, yeah.
Oh, no! Oh, goodness. Anyway, they're telling us to get back to the game. But, yeah, so that does still
live on... I never finished that answer, but go ahead.
Well, I'm going to leave it there myself. But if you'd like to carry on, by all means...
I'll save it for my YouTube show.
That's what you should really be doing on TikTok. We were talking about TikTok last week.
So Kirby thought that was funny.
He nearly fell out of
his chair. How did the audience react?
It was one of the loudest group of laughing people I've ever heard. Unfortunately, they were laughing at me.
Yeah.
But I also thought it was funny.
I must tell you, I've never done anything that stupid.
What? No, you definitely have. You're far more professional than me.
I've made gaffes before, but...
Yeah, what's your worst gaffe? What's a big blooper you've ever had?
It was live on the air during an SEC Nation show, and I'm trying to remember the circumstances.
Was I there?
There were these guys that, I think the name of the this player at Missouri, was it Kendrick Brothers or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it was a Thursday night, and I think maybe Joe was hosting it.
I wasn't there, yeah.
He had to go up, and we're just standing on the field, and it's cold and raining, and somebody asked me, so, well, what do you think about the game? I said, well, the Kendrick Brothers really need a big game.
By the way, that's like not even that bad.
I'm just like staring straight ahead, like, what did I say here?
I know. And you know how that goes when you've already said it and it's
the
like...
The good news was I don't think anyone was watching.
Well, you know,
the game may have been on ESPN or something, so people would...
Yeah, so that's why, because I've never even heard about that. And yeah. I usually know all of your embarrassing moments.
It was not a YouTube sensation.
No. And listen, like, I've obviously had other ones that have ended up on YouTube, like getting knocked over on the sideline and all those things.
Oh, well, that was a career-enhancing move for you.
100%. I totally did it on purpose.
I know you did.
I did. I wanted to just be whacked down like that, and I thought, you know, maybe...
Yeah, I would say that...
It'll help my career.
It's funny, you reminded me of probably the stupidest thing I've ever done.
Oh.
It was here. It was the year before, and this is on YouTube.
Okay, look it up, people. Tweet it at me.
So it was 2014. Alabama was playing Missouri in the SEC championship game. And the SEC Nation had not started yet because the
right.
network. So I spent the year traveling with College Game Day. And yeah. But I was with them this week. They sent me, so they said, you know, we want you to go to the SEC game. And so I'm on the, it was my first year at ESPN. I did not know a lot of, not that I know a lot now. So I had a what they call it, a stick mic. Yeah.
Oh, and I know what this is.
So Chris Fowler is interviewing me. And as the interview starts, I think the Missouri band comes out to practice. So I start out like this, and as the interview proceeds, my hand moves up like this, and it ended, and it was like humiliating because nothing. I didn't know what I was talking about.
Well, yeah, because you can't hear anything.
So I started. You've been there where you're young. Well, I wasn't young, but you're new in a field. So I walked off the set, not the set, off the field, and. All of a sudden, my phone started blowing up, and I didn't even want to.
You thought, what are they going to say about me?
What I didn't know was this. So I'm doing this. They go back to the set, and there's Corso, Fowler, Desmond, and Herbstreit, and they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite TV moments that you've ever had, to be totally honest. And the funny thing is, too, not everyone knows. There's something in your ear that, you know, you're trying to make sure you can hear. But
Well, somebody told me that that's not really the way you're supposed to do it. It's like,
Well, yeah, it was a little more diagonal than perpendicular, you know?
I mean, when you were on the sidelines all those years doing games.
Oh, I just blew my ears out.
How did you do it?
I would just keep turning it up, and that's probably why I had to develop a skill of lip reading, which has come in handy because I can always tell if someone's talking about somebody or me or whomever because I can read lips. So beware. The mask thing got in the way of that a little bit, but I can still do that. But it's mainly because I think I'm already, you know, at 33. How old am I? I think I'm 33.
You're 33?
I'm either 32 or 33.
You're 30. I thought you were still in your 20s.
Wow, Paul. You are so sweet. Thank you. I thought you were still in your 20s too, but then I found out that's not true.
Try trebling that.
So what do you think is going to happen in this game? I'm legitimately fascinated to find out who you're going to pick tomorrow on SEC Nation.
Well, the preamble to my picks, and you've been with me for many, many years of my picks, you've never had me pick against, seen me pick against Alabama.
Yeah, he doesn't usually. But is that, are you, by the way, someone texted him, so that's what he's doing. Is that what you're thinking you're going to do tomorrow?
Well, I went back and checked. I have not picked against Alabama since the 2010 Iron Bowl, and even then it was so weird. I remember being on I was on a local show, and the guy asked me in the morning. It was a Friday afternoon. It was a Friday morning. The game was on Friday. He said, "Who do you like in the game?" I go, "Auburn."
Tomorrow, but I will
so,
say this.
So Auburn was down 24-3 at halftime,
right.
And the same guy who was a talk show, he was a talk show host, he was a local anchor, he screamed in front of the entire Bryant Denny Stadium, "Hey, Fama, that was really a stupid pick." He said that at halftime.
Wow. Did you scream back at him?
I just.
Oh, you're always the classic.
Held my head down, and of course Auburn won the game 27-24 or something.
You got a knack for some of these picks. I think your record's pretty good. So, all right. So I
have to ask you a question.
Oh, what?
I went against her early on, but where is the baby Reese pick going to be?
So, I will tell you this. So, Reese is now 11-3 on the season. She picked Alabama last week, and as you know, quite dicey there for a little bit when it came to her record. I am not going to reveal her pick here.
Oh.
I know. Breaking news.
Sacrosanct.
We have to wait until tomorrow. But I do know who she picks, and all I would say is there is some extra bells and whistles for this pick that people don't want to miss.
I think she's picking Alabama.
You do?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, you know, people like to say that she goes for the red helmets, but there were two red helmets.
Yeah.
So that theory is out for this week. But it was funny because last week, actually, you know, we're watching the game and we're hanging out with my family, and all of a sudden, on the final drive of Alabama in regulation, all of a sudden, out of the blue, she just yells, "Roll Tide!" And we didn't know. We were like, okay, Reese, you know. And then they end up tying it up and going to overtime and end up winning the game. So there's a theory amongst the Rutledge clan that maybe Reese was good luck last week.
Okay. Well, I'll go wherever she goes.
All right. Well, the good thing is her pick's happening before yours, so you will be able to go. You'll be able to go with her tomorrow.
Okay, I don't know. I'm,
look at Paul. Paul is like, you know what? I'm going to go with a toddler over my own brain. I will say, with the record 11-3, might be wise to do so.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of record.
I know. I look at your record.
I'm 3-11 or something.
Paul, I'm so glad you're in the warmth.
No, it's
makes
great.
Me really happy.
Well, anyway, next Friday. Are you around anywhere? Because
I think we're going to have to. Yes.
I know you work every Friday.
I will. Are you asking me to be on your show next Friday? Is that what's happening here?
This is not for publication, but you know, these are tough separations when the next
I
week
can't,
we're.
I
remember
I
one, the first year we did this together. The first Sunday we were. I was in some store and we were texting.
Paul was in Target and he was like, "What has my life come to?"
I've gone.
Now I'm just shopping.
I've gone from hanging out with you every week to
well, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this opening and I'm going to fly myself to Charlotte for next Friday's show.
Oh, okay, good.
Here's the reality. Even though nobody at home really likes us together, I honestly don't know how I'm going to survive without you for a couple weeks. So
okay.
I'm going to take that matter into my own hands and come see you guys and actually go see my friends there in Charlotte too.
Okay.
Okay, good. So that's decided, right? I'm glad we could work that out.
Why are they playing the music? I still had questions for you.
Well, the good thing is you can ask them in the break. And based off of how we started this segment, I have questions for you. We'll report back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we're back. I think we're back.
We're back.
That's what always happens when you take your plugs out. It's great to have Chris Doering here, as we have just had an amazing 3.5 hours, and we're not done yet. We always talk to Chris toward the end of the Friday show to kind of look around. And
nice to be here with you in person.
Yeah, I feel like I know where you're speaking from, yeah. But it is good to see you. And you know, there are a lot of games tomorrow, but we'll talk about this one because of the absolute significance of it. Chris, you've analyzed it. You've talked about it ad nauseum. But as we get closer to kickoff, what are you looking for when we get to 4 o'clock tomorrow?
You know, I think the thing that stands out to me is how few times Alabama's come into one of these games as an underdog, how well they've done in situations where they've been underdogs. But yet, I have a hard time drawing up a recipe for how they pull off this particular upset. We're talking about a team that I talked about back in September having a lot of flaws, some issues, particularly on the offensive line, that I think could be glaring weaknesses tomorrow when they go into that game against Georgia. But Georgia has been and continues to be the most impressive team in college football, the most complete team. They execute at a high level. I don't care who they play. Everybody wants to down-talk the offenses they've played. But this is a team that does exactly what they're supposed to do, particularly on the defensive side. I think that's what stands out to me the most is how disciplined they are, how well they play together as a unit, and how uninterested they are in any sort of personal acclaim.
And, I mean, you've played on championship teams, teams that have gone through this type of gauntlet. I say gauntlet because, you know, everyone wants to be dismissive and say, well, Georgia hasn't played anyone, but they have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been
my big argument against Cincinnati, all right? Cincinnati has that big win over Notre Dame, but what have they done the rest of the year? It is a grind playing football in the SEC, as you know. I mean, every week, whether you're playing against one of the top teams or one of the lower tier teams, they're going to take it out of you physically. They're going to take it out of you emotionally. And by the time you get to the end of the season, you're worn down. And I think that's what the most impressive thing to me about Georgia is their ability to sustain these injuries and yet have another guy step up. The depth of talent on this team, the guys that we didn't even know about last year. Their top three wide receivers this year didn't even have a single catch last year. Guys that have just taken advantage of opportunities and turned themselves into household names. It's awesome to see.
I know you can't go back a week and say, well, let's talk about the Alabama-Auburn game except the final couple of minutes because we all know what happened. But as you look at Alabama down the stretch, the LSU game, even the Tennessee game to a small degree, then the Arkansas game, and then ultimately the Auburn game, what do you see there as this season comes to an end?
Everything that ails them starts with the offensive line. Their inability to run the ball, all right? Second half games are far too close because they can't put them away the way they usually do, running the football, taking the air out of the ball. They can't convert third and fourth down short situations. I mean, how much did they struggle last week against Auburn in those types of situations? And the offensive line can't protect. I mean, as good as Bryce Young is, I think he's the best quarterback in the country. I think he's got tremendous skill players around him. But it doesn't matter if you can't protect. And we saw that last week. Not only was he sacked 7 times, but he was also under pressure about every single time he dropped back. So not only does the offensive line have to play better, Bill O'Brien has to put him in a better situation. RPOs. boots, naked, get him outside of the pocket, and maybe even run him a little bit more, because I think adding him to the run game could help them with some of those deficiencies they have, lining up and getting a push on the line of scrimmage like we've typically seen from Alabama.
You know, the guy at the end of the bar is screaming, okay, Chris, why haven't they done that before? So, I mean, I know they're trying to protect Bryce Young, but
he's slight, though, isn't he? I think there's a lot of people that worry about his safety. As many hits as he took last week, even when he was avoiding sacks, throwing the football, the guy's constantly taking shots. So I do worry about his health, and I think that might be why they've managed him a little differently. You know, McCarroll, we saw what happened to him when he was being run as often as he was. So there's a balance to it. And this is a game that everything's on the line. Yeah. So you got to throw everything out there and do what's going to allow you to make it as most advantageous as you possibly can.
He is so explosive, and he's got some great receivers. You mentioned the running game. So I'm more fascinated by what the mindset is over in the defensive meetings, because Kirby has a set strategy. He's been consistent. In this game, do you stay the course?
Or? No reason to change anything they've been doing, right? I mean, they are now the one that's dictating and sort of instead of reacting. Usually it's Alabama in that situation. But one of the things that they do really well is create pressure with their front four. They can drop into coverage. They play a lot of zone coverage. You're not going to see them press a lot. You're not going to see them play man coverage a lot. They can play four down, get pressure on the quarterback, and play vision coverage behind him, which does two things. One, it allows them to keep everything in front of them. But two, if Bryce Young does break contain, then Georgia is not in man coverage with their back turned to the ball carrier, where you're giving up big chunks of yardage. They're fast. They can read. They can react. And I think that's one of the things that stands out to me about Georgia's defense is how well they tackle in space. These guys, you may be able to try to offset some of the pass rush with some quick passes, the screen game. But you look at Georgia, even starting in the Clemson game, they run to the ball with bad intentions. They tackle really well, and everybody swarms to it to make sure they're finished off.
If they frustrate Alabama early on, and I'm sure that's in their mindset, what does Alabama do to get out of that?
Yeah, I worry about that. I was critical earlier in the season of the defense. That was a game last week they probably should have lost and would have been down way more than 10 points, but the defense kept them in the ball games. I think the defense has improved. I still have some skepticism about, you know, maybe if they're as good a run defense as what the stats would tell you. But I do believe that this is going to be a game that their defense is going to have to keep them in. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game. As explosive as Alabama's offense is, I just don't know that they're going to be able to have time to put up the points that they're capable of with all the talent that they have.
And conversely, the Georgia offense, which nobody seems to like, although...
Why do you not like it?
I'm talking about perceptively.
I'm saying in general, why do people not like it?
What
do they
do? I don't know.
They take shots early in the game. They're efficient throwing the football. They build a lead, and then they play defense and run the football in the second half. It's a recipe that's worked 12 times this season. Why would you do anything different? So I do have a sense that they're going to want to maybe dictate the physicality early in the game. How much do they run? Because I talked to some Florida coaches who were really amazed at the success they had, kind of bullying Alabama on the lines of scrimmage. So I wonder if Kirby and the offense, Todd Monken, wants to try to establish a little more physicality running the football. They're really good in the early downs on play action passes. So I could see that happening. But I think they're going to be aggressive like they have been in the first half all season long. For them, their sake, build a lead and then run the football, run the clock, play great defense.
I'm going to ask you to comment on what I just asked you in relation to the Georgia offense. Why do you think it's because people can't get last year out of their mind with Stetson Bennett, even though we've already seen 12 games?
It's a shame, though. I think they can't get it out of their mind from last year, and they look at him as just a walk-on quarterback, right, that's maybe overachieved. It's a great story, but, hey, this guy's turned into not only a guy that's effective running the football, whether it's in the zone read stuff, scrambling as we saw against Tennessee when he should have been sacked, putting his foot in the ground and getting into the end zone on a 10-yard touchdown scramble, or throwing the football. Go back and look at the numbers on air yards thrown over 20, over 30, over 40. His completion percentage is way up. The touchdown interception ratio is way up. He's done everything they've asked him to do, and yet people still say, what about JT? JT, what a great luxury to have where you have two really good quarterbacks. The problem is they haven't had to use him. And so I don't anticipate they have to use him in this game tomorrow either.
In the end, take us to the end of the game, and what are we looking at?
I have a hard time visualizing Alabama staying in this ballgame, which is weird to say because I don't think we rarely see Alabama get blown out. But I just think Georgia is the most complete team in the country. In a year where there's a lot of flawed teams, I think they have an opportunity to get the monkey off their back with this Alabama thing looming, and then hit the stride as they head into the college football playoffs. I don't see them letting up. I think this is Todd McShay talked about their defense having 11 draftable players on the defensive side alone. This team is built to win a championship. If not now, then when?
Yeah, yeah. At about 7:30 tomorrow night, if we're still asking that question, there's going to be a lot of down dogs in this city. Chris, always great to see you. Yeah, thanks so much,
Paul.
For making time.
Appreciate you having me, man.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.